Welcome to The Learning Curve, a show about helping kids get good grades in school and succeed in life. The Learning Curve is for parents, teachers, and students, because all of life is a learning curve, and you'll succeed to the extent that you can learn easily. Now, here's your hosts, the authors of How to Learn, How to Teach, Overcoming the Seven Barriers to Comprehension, Roger and Virginia.
Today's show with Roger and Virginia on The Learning Curve is about the things that worry parents most. How can they make the educational system work for them and benefit for their child? And we have as our guest today, Elaine Siegel, who's the founder and president of Stizzle.com. Now, Elaine has been in the educational game now for 35 years and began long ago as a grade school teacher, grades 8 and 12, as well as university, before she founded a classroom-based brick-and-mortar, as she likes to call it, educational company in 1995, which ran for 14 years. Stizzle.com, Elaine will be able to tell you how she invented that name. It's quite a tricky name, and it's spelled STIZZIL.com. So welcome, Elaine. I know Virginia's got the first hot topic question for you.
Take it away. I'm looking forward to it.
Hi, Elaine. I see that you are an NCLB provider. Now, for those listeners who don't know what NCLB stands for, it's No Child Left Behind, which was the bright idea of the Bush administration. And I'd like to ask you, what was the original idea behind NCLB?
So I was one of the very first NCLB providers, and it's quite a process to go through to become approved. But the original idea behind it was that the government felt that students should have a universal United States level of competency, and that an A in one school is equal to an A in another, or that a child from Nebraska should be reading in third grade at the same level as a child from California, Texas, or New York. And so No Child Left Behind was mandated to make sure that children of all economic, socio backgrounds, etc., were all equal across the United States and all had the same level of competency. So the very first year that they started this program, I applied and became a provider. The application originally was relatively simple. It was about a 10-page process, but they really theoretically were putting you through the hoops. They wanted to know who you were you credentialed and licensed to teach, etc. And we filled out this application. It was a simple application, but took us quite a while to do because there were so many questions and you had to be obviously very honest and frank with them. When the first list came out, and it's based by state, so when the first list came out and we saw who some of the other providers were, I was a little appalled. Because and I'm not mentioning states, please, but in our state, one of the providers was an electrical shock therapy therapist. And he was approved to be a No Child Left Behind provider. What that means is that No Child Left Behind deals specifically with the bottom, I'd say, 20% of the students. So in order to be qualified for No Child Left Behind, or eligible, I should say, for No Child Left Behind, you must be in a school that has failed state testing for 3 years. Mm. You must have failed all the tests yourself, and your parents must be eligible for poverty level, i.e. free milk, free lunch money students in the schools. Then what happens is, once you're approved as a provider, which obviously was not as exclusive as I thought it might have been, because I think that using credentialed educators is a little better than shock therapy.
Yeah.
What happens is, you all go one night to a gymnasium. It's like going on a pony show, and you all set up your booths around the auditorium, and parents who are now on poverty level, whose children have failed every test, who may or may not be involved in their child's education, decide which provider to use. So the more bells and whistles you have, the more fancy things you have, the judo company that promises to take children on field trips every week, or the company that gives out the prettiest gifts are the ones that the parents go to become the provider. Mm. And in the education system, it was quite interesting because we had our first year that we did this, my company's first year that we did this, we had, I guess about 400 students we were the provider for, meaning we were eligible to teach them. And of the 400 students, more than 300 of our students phased out of the program. They all passed the following year. Now, we're not exclusively responsible for that. The school districts changed their methods, but I hope to believe that some of what we did helped as well. By the time 3 years later, I decided to no longer be a No Child Left Behind provider, it was mandated by the state that 50% of the education time be done in testing. Mm. You couldn't discuss it with the child. You couldn't try to figure out what the child knew or didn't know by discussing, by dealing with art, by dealing with all the different modalities that education offers.
Right.
You had to give a paper and pencil test. And I refused to do it any longer because that, to me, was no longer education.
Right.
So while I've been a No Child Left Behind provider, I doubt very much that my new company will ever be involved with No Child Left Behind. I, as an educator, and most educators I know, are very, very disgruntled and disapproving of the process, of what it's become. It's no longer following its original intent.
And it's not education any longer. It's like...
It's all testing. Cooking.
Yeah,
it's testing.
It's like an assembly line.
It's teaching to a test. It's sad because children learn differently. Adults learn differently.
Exactly
and
right.
And to be forced to always do one way doesn't work.
Yeah. And, of course, it's multiple choice testing. It's not testing for understanding, competence, or ability to apply any of the knowledge that's involved.
Well, some of it is. Some of it is. I mean, some of the questions that they ask, while they're not asking you to write essay questions, some of the questions they are asking are inference questions. They're asking what the climax is of a story, et cetera. They are asking those types of questions. But then again, that's all the teachers are teaching anymore.
Mm.
So many of the classrooms... And I've been going around and looking at different charter schools and looking at different public and parochial schools. And what some of them are doing are literally teaching to the test and nothing else. So much of the beauty of literature has been destroyed, and much of the using your own mind to really be creative and think about what it is that you want to be learning and saying and thinking and what the next step is, that's gone.
Amazing.
So I heard in what you were saying before something about states started changing their way of measuring their students.
Well, they had to because of the mandated tests.
Oh, I thought you meant that they changed their. In other words, let's see how our students, where our students lie in the grid, and then they're not where we want them to be. Let's change the method of testing.
Well, they're changing not the method of the testing, they're changing the method of how they're teaching. So they're teaching to the test.
To the test rather than educating children.
In some schools, for example, there are a couple, an Abbott school, I don't know if you're familiar with that term, so I'll explain it. An Abbott school is one where every single parent in the school district is on poverty level. So it's a complete district of free lunch, free milk money, et cetera. And in some of the Abbott school districts now, they're following a system where they may have 85, 95, 200 elementary school classes in grade 3. And anybody who walks into a grade 3 class on Wednesday at 10:03, every single teacher has to be on exactly the same page on the same word on the same math problem.
Mm.
Wow.
Mm.
So it gives you no flexibility. It doesn't allow you to say, I have a child who's visually impaired and I need to do 3D work with that child. I have to have that child to learn math, use math blocks. I have another child who is only learning visually. I have another child who's sitting with an audio tape on because that child is an auditory learner. All that's out the window. All that we've learned about the modalities of education in some districts are gone because they're petrified of not passing the test. Because if they don't pass the test, they start to lose government money. Mm. The government gives the state money, the state gives the school district money. The school district is the one who picks the No Child Left Behind provider, or lets the parents pick it. And the parents whose children are not doing well are the ones who are making the decision.
And also what's not happening is that the material is not being made relevant to the child, whereas if you were to try and teach a math problem to somebody living in at that poverty level, you might teach it in a different way than you would teach it to somebody else.
Now, I'm sure that nothing that I say about any of this, nothing in education is 100%. I'm sure there's phenomenal districts and great schools that are doing this and that are doing it well. There are children whose test scores are coming up. I know one, where I am now, there are some charter schools whose, and they're in Abbott districts, and their test scores are equal to those of high economic areas. But all they're doing is teaching reading and math. They're not doing any science, they're not doing any social studies, no arts, no music, nothing. So what are we giving up to make sure that every single child has a level of proficiency that the government is mandating?
How about the core common standards that are now being configured and put out there? Do you have any feelings on that?
Yeah, I do. I think that there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'd love to know that children who are in schools are going to be challenged to core standards. I just hope that the core standards, and they're not making them to me as readily available to those who are not in the school districts at the present time, but to me, core standards are critical. I would love to see core standards be tough and be realistic so that our children are going to be equal to those who are from overseas and in different countries and not just be passing, but be equal to. What bothers me sometimes about core standards or core anything is that that's where we stop. And
yeah.
We think, okay, it's good enough to get a C. A C means you're adequate. A C means average. I have no problem being average. And I personally do have a problem with our students believing that, because I think that whatever you set the bar at, most students will try to aim to 70 to 80%. So if you set the bar really high, you're going to get better results.
I notice we've been having a conversation about the lower percentile and also the poverty level folk. But for parents who've got children in those groups, and if they wanted to somehow or other get tutoring outside of that limited paradigm, and they came to a company like Stizzle, where could they get the financing to do that? Is it available through the government system, or what goes on there?
Tutoring outside of the system is theoretically for the low 10 to 20% of the children economically in the states. Tutoring is supposed to be No Child Left Behind. That's what they're expecting it to be. It is
right.
Supplemental education. There are grants that are available at this point for low-end students who cannot afford it, but might really need it and might benefit from it tremendously. Stizzle is in the process right now. We have two grant writers who are writing grants, not through the government, but through independent agencies, to take the model that we have that's working incredibly well with, unfortunately or fortunately for us, those who can afford it, and being able to offer it in low economic areas.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to have grants to be able to do that, because otherwise we'd be out of business.
And the money is not available from the government. And for
the money might be available from the government, and I don't really like saying this, but I'm not sure I want to do the government. The hoopla and the rigmarole that you have to go through, as I found out with No Child Left Behind, is unbelievable.
I'm with you. But for well-off parents who really want their children to excel at the highest level, they just simply pay the fees themselves for private tutoring.
Correct. There are different levels of tutoring companies. There are other tutoring companies out there who are much, much, much less expensive than Stizzle is. They don't use licensed U.S. educators. They don't use audio video. They tutor with chat. And
yep.
That, to me, isn't what I'm looking for education.
I notice there's been a lot of talk about difference of between how boys and girls learn. What has been your experience, or what's the state of the educational art on that?
So I do believe there's a huge difference between how boys and girls learn, and not only how they learn, how they respond to education,
yeah.
and when they respond to education. And in the lower grades, the girls tend to excel more than the boys because they're people pleasers. The boys don't care. And this is not just my opinion. This has all been
documented. This is the observation, yeah.
Correct. And so the boys just want to be done coloring so they can go out and play with their trucks. And again, this is all stereotypical, and I know that there will be many parents out there who are saying, but that's not what my child does. And of course not. It's stereotypical. The average boy does not, in the younger grades, care so much about what his paper looks like, but the girls will sit there ad nauseum until every letter is perfect and their I's are dotted and their T's are crossed, and they want to please the teacher. They want to please themselves. They're happy with their arts and crafts pieces of education. And the boys just want to be done and go play. They have no patience, which goes through probably middle school. And so the girls are very quick learners. Girls tend to read faster and better than boys, again, because of the patience level. Once they hit high school, the boys tend to really zoom up and zoom along and excel in math and in science. And much of it is because since math is relatively quick as compared to reading and writing, which takes much, much longer at those grade levels, the students, boys and girls tend to, from what everything they've been told their whole lives, the girls don't do as well and are scared of math and some sciences. So I love all girls' math classes and remediation classes for just girls in math and in science. The boys, once they hit high school, start to equal out with the girls, and once they get college or graduation from high school within their vision, they realize what has to be done and they keep going. Girls are very patient, boys just aren't. And the way they learn is girls love to do things rotely. They'll just keep going and doing it. And boys want to learn the theory and move on.
Do you feel that because boys like to be done and get active and play with their cars and their toys and be outside actually working with the physical universe, do you think that that might contribute to them being more interested or more able in math and science?
It could be. It makes a lot of sense. I also think that part of it is that girls are just, because of our society, girls are told from a very young age that, oh, it's okay if you don't understand math. I was scared of math in high school. I can't tell you the number of friends I have, women, who are highly educated, who have told their girls, I've heard them tell their girls this, that don't worry, I hated math in high school and in elementary school. Not to worry, we'll help you. And we'll get you a tutor. Or it doesn't matter, we understand. Your grades in math don't have to be as high. Or if the girls really start doing well in math and science, they're still, in many instances, pushed to, you can be a math teacher. Do you want to be a nurse? As opposed to, what about a neuroscientist? Or what about a physician? Or what about another area of mathematics?
Right. Because you're talking to a brontosaurus here. When I was educated, the boys and girls were educated separately. And in Australia, I think it was about 1960 that they first put them together and had to move through high school as co-education. Of course, that was the point when Australian education went into the sewer.
Well,
too much distraction for the boys and girls.
I actually have a personal story to say about girls and math and science, and that is, one, I excelled at science when I was in school. I loved science. And it turns out my niece is also excelling in math and science, and she has actually decided she wants to be an engineer.
There are always some exceptions to the rule, as we know, but the general observation is the girls tend to be able to sit a lot more quietly and patiently get on with things, as you say, and the boys will fidget. But then there's the sort of learner, which a lot of young fellows are, who has to be active. We had an MD on a month or so ago who wrote the book about ADHD and all the false diagnosis that's going on. And one of the handlings for a kid that had been wrongly diagnosed, well, let him fidget. That's the way he learns.
I just recently read a fascinating article about people who doodle, and that if you stop doodling, you're stopping the person from the method of thinking that that particular person has. And it was fascinating to me because I'm a doodler. Three quarters of my notes that I take are basically meaningless scribbles and always the same. But to me, if I'm focusing on that doodling, I'm able to think because I'm a visual learner.
Yep.
So for me to do something auditorily, my fingers have to be moving. And I remember getting into a great deal of trouble in school because I was always doodling. I wasn't drawing elaborate pictures because I can't draw to save my life, but I just scratch. And when I can't do that, I'm not focused. Yeah. And I was happy to see that validity, having some validity to it.
You brought a smile to Virginia's face, so apparently that's her thing as well. Now, I didn't noodle, and I didn't fidget. You're talking two real, what's the right word here, exceptions
opposites
to the rule.
But I think that's key in education, and that is, for every rule, there are 50% or 25% exceptions to the rule. And I think that what makes education great is when you have a phenomenal educator in the room who looks at every student as an individual, not as a stereotype, not as how am I going to fit this child into the box. Education has to be out-of-the-box thinking, and it's difficult to do. If you have 30 students in a room and you need to have differentiated learning, which is one of the new taglines, which is what those of us in education have been doing for the last 40 years, differentiated learning is making sure that each child is being taught to his or her learning curve and learning style.
Right.
And it's difficult with 30 students in the room, but it's not impossible.
Is there something that parents can do at home? In other words, if their child is at school and the teacher is attempting to do differentiated learning, or maybe not, is there something parents can do at home to help their child?
Yes, on a variety of levels. Parents, first of all, have to make sure that there is an environment at home to work. And that means that either a space in a bedroom where it's, you know, desk is set up, or for the child who goes to the bedroom, turns on the computer, and you never hear from him or her again, or is listening to music, that it means at the kitchen table. But they have to make it so that it is a workable situation. And parents don't think about that, being honest with you. I mean, I've had students, and we have the online Stizzle now, and I've had students both online and in person, where parents have music blasting in the background while the child's online, or they're walking back and forth, or one mom came over and thought she was being cute and walked the cat over the back of the child's back. When I'm in the middle of a critical point of teaching something, and the child's just about there, and the mom comes over and walks the cat across the kid's back to be cute. I mean, you can't do things like that. You have to really create an environment where the child knows that's education time. That's when it is. And it would be fabulous if the parent were doing something constructive at the same time. I always say, if you want your child to learn to be a great reader and appreciate reading, turn all electronics off, including the radio, I'm sorry. Yeah. But turn everything off, and when your child is reading, pick up a book and read. Otherwise, how is your child going to love to understand that reading is such a gift that you can have? So first, I'd say the parent has to set an atmosphere in the house. Second of all, a parent really needs to understand what it is a child's doing in school. I can't tell you the number of times that I talk to kids and parents, I'll say to parents, now, what math subject is your child in this year in high school? Well, there's only five that you can pick from. And I would say 70% of the time, the parent has to go to the child and say, are you in algebra 2 or geometry this year? How can a parent not know?
Parents actually have to set standards that the child can then work toward or strive for or try and emulate.
And take an interest.
If the parent's interest is not there and standards are not set, then what can they expect from the kid?
But then again, you have the helicopter parent who's doing the homework and turning it in. And that goes up through and including high school. I've had parents who have taken the essays for applications for college that I've worked on with the students, and it's all the students' work and writing, because I don't believe you do for the children. I think that you just guide them.
Right.
And I've had parents who have redone essays because they thought it wasn't good enough, and then children don't get into colleges because it sounds like mom with a PhD wrote it. And parents don't sometimes know when to let go.
Here's a question that we often get in the correspondence, and it's to do with the chain of command in schools. So if you have an issue, what do you do first in terms of trying to get it resolved in the current educational system?
You mean as a parent?
As a parent, yes.
That's a great question, and I really do wish that schools would expose parents to that chain of command at the beginning of the year. So if there is an issue, I recently wrote an article and was quoted in greatschools.org on bullying, and it was because of the chain of command that people wanted to know. And what I said is the first thing you do is go to the classroom teacher. But before you go to a teacher or to anyone, you have to be armed with documentation. So you don't just go running into the teacher screaming and hollering, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like the next thing, you're picking on my child, or this letter grade wasn't fair. What you need to do is to have actual objective documentation. So I would say chain of command, first of all, is to start with yourself and be objective about what it is that you're trying to convey. Then go to the teacher. If you get no satisfaction from the teacher, you go, if based on the level of the school and how many administrators there are, you may have to go to the guidance counselor, but if there is no guidance counselor, you then go to the principal. And again, the more documentation, the better. I went to my child's teacher with these six issues, and not one of these issues was addressed, and here are the dates and the times that this happened, and here's what I was told, and this wasn't done. What are you prepared to do about it? Even keel, objective, scream at the mirror at home before you go into the school, objective, objective, objective. If the principal gives you no satisfaction, then you go to the superintendent. And if the superintendent gives you no satisfaction, then you can go to the county commission's education director, and it depends, every state calls them something else. But there is somebody on the county and or the state level that is the education commissioner. And then if nothing happens from there and you really have been doing your documentation, you're doing your research, etc., then I'd say go to the press. Unfortunately, parents sometimes take one of two sides. They take the side of, the teacher's always right. My mom did that to me in school once when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Teacher's always right, and I don't care what you have to say, the teacher is right. To, my child never lies, my child is 100% honest, and look at what this horrible, rotten person did to my child.
Mm.
And I've been on the recipient end of that, where, for example, a child cheated in my class 3, 4, 5, 6 times, documented it, called home, sent cheat sheets home to parents, etc., and then the child asked me for a letter of recommendation to a college, and I refused to write it because I didn't have anything nice to say. Then got, you know, was not, the principal wasn't happy that I refused to do this. But what was I going to say? You know, Mary Jane cheated throughout my class. Of course, take her to your college. And if you want to do honest evaluations, they have to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that the chain of command, you have to look that if there are two people, there will be three sides to a story. And you have to be objective. And no one story is ever totally objective. So the more documentation that you can put into place, the better off you are.
Elaine, at Stissel, you're doing tutoring, and it's one-on-one with children, but done over the internet. How does that actually work?
Well, it's so fascinating. Having been in education for so long, I decided that I wanted to be able to expand my company and go online and do it so that we can match teachers from all over the United States with students from all over the United States. We're using a conferencing program that allows us to see the child sees the teacher. We use headsets so there's no extraneous noise coming in to distract the child. So the teacher and the children can see and hear each other. We have whiteboard capability. We can stream things in. So if a child is doing To Kill a Mockingbird and you want to show 2 minutes of a clip of a movie. You can do that. You can post documents. You can share online. One student was very interested in dissecting a frog, and we found a program, and we just downloaded it, and we're dissecting a frog with a biology teacher and a student. So there is much that you can do. It's exciting, but we're not just one-on-one. We do one-on-one tutoring. We do small group work. We do enrichment work for the learning disabled or the special ed or the gifted child or just the average child whose school has cut out the arts. Mm-hmm. And you can have up to 8 students online at the same time, and they can all participate at the same time. They have different colors if they want to write on a board together. It's phenomenal. It's been quite exciting. And
that's almost like having the tutor sitting in the room with you. That's interesting.
You know what? Except that it's better because the student doesn't have to worry, is somebody going to lean over and touch me? It's ultra safe. They don't have to worry about, did that person have garlic for dinner last night, or is it a cigarette smoker, or I'm highly allergic and Miss Mary came into the room with perfume on. And all those obstacles are gone. They can do it from the privacy of their own home, and they're not restricted to whomever is in the area. So the child from Nevada can be working with a teacher from Texas or New Mexico if that teacher is the best teacher for that subject. So it just eliminates all boundaries and all walls. We expect to be global as well within the next year and a half. We're national now.
Well, Elaine, it's been a lot of fun talking to you today, getting some of the real nitty-gritty on the inside curves, so to speak, on the American educational system. I know our listeners will have gotten a lot out of this.
Well, I thank you. It was really a great deal of fun for me.
Thanks for listening to The Learning Curve with Roger and Virginia. For more information on the subjects covered during the show, visit howtolearneasily.com. Or send an email to questions@howtolearneasily.com.